Welcome to Live Boldly with Sarah Schulten-Kranz, a survivor, thriver, adventurer, and believer in all things possible. My mission is to guide others to live their life boldly, regardless of circumstances. I believe we all have the power to overcome and lead joy-filled, happy lives. Recorded from the trail or in my office, I share inspiring stories from everyday people because we all deserve to be heard. You will also hear from handpicked professionals ready to guide you beside me. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Live Boldly with Sarah Schulten-Kranz. On today's episode, I welcome Laura Van Zee Taylor, the director of Walk Through This, a documentary and production of my own healing journey in nature. We just got done filming in the Grand Canyon over Thanksgiving of this year, and oh my gosh, was that a transformational experience in itself? Please grab your journal, grab a pencil, and grab some inspiring notes from this episode. There is a lot of great storytelling, some good truth, inspiration, and hope. And then also I want you to think about how you might want to be a part of this project. We are looking for people that are ready to walk beside us as this project is coming into its phase of post-production. If that is through donations, if it is through executive producing, connecting us with other people that might want to or be able to be a part of creating a ripple effect of change in this world, we welcome all of you. So please take note. DM me, post this, reach out, share your thoughts, and be a part of this change. And here we begin. Hey, you guys, I am welcoming Laura Van Zee Taylor onto the podcast. She is a dear friend. She is the director and producer of Walk Through This, the documentary that we just actually completed. Well, we've been filming for a while, but we completed filming in the Grand Canyon just a couple of weeks ago. So I wanted to have Laura on for a few reasons. Number one, woman, you are an incredible inspiration to other women that go back to school and start their whole new career of whatever choice, you know, whatever they choose to go down. When I found out that you went back to school and started creating films, I was like, okay, that's badass. That's really cool. And then you decided to take my story on, which was an honor and a blessing. And I'm so grateful to you for doing that. But Laura, hello.
Hello, Sarah.
I'm
happy
to
be here.
I just adore you. There's so many reasons that I want to have you on. Like, first of all, people, you're like the person, you're like that creative source behind the camera that these stories and these films could not get out there without people like you. And I've said over and over that I think it's so important for people to hear your story as much as it is for the story that you are actually showing on film and creating on film. So I want to back it up a little bit and just get to know you. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the documentary and the filming in the Grand Canyon and how that was, that experience. And then we're going to go into talking about post-production of the film that right now is being created. And what others can do to help us along the way to make this actually happen. So let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thank you so much. As you said, making films is a relatively new thing for me. I was in the publishing industry for many years. And when I had my kids, I stayed home with them and just worked part-time from home. And after about 10 years of that, I came to this point where, I was like, what am I going to do with the next phase of my life? And I sort of played around with different ideas of what I could do, you know, my different interests. I could, you know, go back to school and become a counselor, like a psychologist. I could become a graphic designer. And then I think I read something about, you know, how to find your true passion, go back to what you've always loved. And what did you want to do as a little girl? Besides being like a rock star or a ballerina, which weren't really options. I always wanted to make, or a horse. I couldn't become a horse. I wanted to make movies and tell stories. And I felt that I had what it takes to do that, because I actually majored in theater and I got a master's in theater. So I knew how to tell stories, and I was not a professional, but a skilled amateur photographer. And so I thought, well, you know, I could put these two things together. And so when I turned 40, I went through this, I tried all these different things. I took improv classes, all that. And then at the end of that year, the last thing I did was I went to this like 2-week make a movie and 2 weeks kind of summer camp thing in San Francisco for grownups. And I made this little short film, and I loved the process. I loved everything that I learned, and I felt like the film was actually decent, and it was like only 5 minutes, but it actually got into festivals, which was kind of amazing.
Wow.
And so I said, you know what, I'm going to sign up for the year long program and do this. And it was like a technical program in film where you just go every day for a year. And I was like, I'm just going to do this, and I'm just going to learn how to do it. And I was really, really scared to tell anybody because I was afraid they'd laugh at me. Like, you know, you're like at this point, like 41, you're this 41-year-old mom, you know, living in the suburbs. You're going to like go make movies. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
So, it was scary, but it was the perfect timing because my eldest was going to be in fifth grade and my youngest was going to be in first grade. So it was the first year that they were both going to be in school all day long. And they were going to be at the same school. And I was like, this is very convenient. This would be a good time for me to do it. So I kind of just, it was just sort of a leap of faith. I just kind of jumped and did it. And just made a bunch of short films over the course of a year. And
wow.
two more of those got into film festivals, a narrative and a documentary. And I went in thinking I just wanted to make fiction films, you know, narratives, but I enjoyed the documentary process so much. And I realized that it was also something you could do so much more independently for so much less money than making a fiction film. I was like, this is actually much more practical. So I'm gonna focus on making documentaries for a while. So as soon as I got out of film school, I was looking for stories to tell, and I started reading this this blog by a friend of mine's daughter, teenage daughter, and she was writing about her struggles with mental illness and anorexia and her how she sort of came to find her purpose through yoga. And she wrote about this beautifully. And then she also had all these amazing paintings that she did that were so full of emotion and darkness and light. And I thought, well, this would make an excellent short film. What's my plan? I was going to make a 10-minute film. Her name is Maris. And I was going to feature Maris's blogs, like just having her read them in voiceover. And then I was going to animate her paintings to tell this short little story. And I asked her and her mother about that. They agreed. And I started working on it. And it just sort of organically grew into a feature film before I even knew it. I started interviewing her. I started interviewing her mom, her dad, and then her yoga teachers, and then eventually her psychiatrist. And before I knew it, I had enough to make a feature film. And I did it all by myself. Like, I did the camera work, I did the sound, I did the editing, the writing. And I had a wonderful friend of mine. I shouldn't say I did it all myself because I didn't. I had a wonderful friend of mine from school who did the animation. So I took pictures of all of Maris's artwork, and I said, you know, and here's the story, the writing part, and, you know, make images, moving images to go with this. And he did a beautiful job, Brandon Eversoll. Shout out to you. And then before we knew it, we had a full-length movie. And for, you know, a few $1,000s, really. It was just, you know, he worked for free, I worked for free. It was really just the cost of the equipment, you know? And this is when like fate intervened, and like, I just am so grateful and thankful. And I don't know how this happened, but my husband was at an alumni cocktail party, which is something he never does. He doesn't do parties and doesn't do alumni events, but he just decided to go to this one in the city. And he ran into this woman, and they were, you know, having drinks, and they were talking, and what do you do? Well, what do you do? And she says, oh, I work in documentary film. I work for a distributor. And my husband's, oh, my wife just finished making a film. Or, you know, she's working on one. And the woman said, oh, what's it about? And he told her, and she said, oh, I'm fascinated. That sounds really, really interesting. Have her call me. So my husband comes home, and he's like, have you ever heard of Rocco Films? And Rocco Films. And I'm like, Rocco Films, of course. They're like, you know, Oscar winning, you know, big documentary film distributor. Like, you met someone from there? And he's like, oh yeah, here's her card. She wants you to call her. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure she was just drunk and being nice. She doesn't really want me to call. And he's like, no, she really seemed interested in your film. I don't know why, but she did. And I'm like, okay. So I got the guts up and I called her and I talked to her about it and my vision, and she was super nice. Her name is Christine Pott Dewey. I call her the fairy godmother of the film. And she said, when you're done editing it, send me a cut. And at this point I had like a pretty rough cut, but I was like, okay, damn, now I really got to work on it. So I just like buckled down really hard for like, I don't know, like 6 weeks maybe. And I just edited that summer until I had a good enough cut for the film. And I sent it to her and I thought, oh man, I'll hear back in a couple months. And like, in like 3-4 days, she called me and she was like, I love it. And I was afraid it was just me. So I showed it to everybody else, including like our CEO, and they all love it. And we want to distribute it. And I was
wow.
like, what? It was like a fairy tale. And then not only that, I said, well, you know, this is just my cut. I don't have any funding and I don't have any money. And, you know, it still needs to be, I still need to take it through a sound mixing studio and a color correcting studio and, you know, get all the polishing and on it. And she said, well, let's see what we can do. And then she came back to me, I don't know, a few weeks later. And they said, well, not only will we distribute it, but we're going to executive produce it. So we're going to go out there and we're going to get the money for you to finish the film. And
they
found this amazing donor in Silicon Valley and, got the money, got me a producer, and we finished the film, and then they sold it to Netflix. So I went from like, you know, being a part-time stay-at-home mom to having a movie in Netflix in like a couple of years. And the movie's called I Am Maris, and you should all check it out. It's a beautiful, inspiring film about overcoming mental illness and anorexia. And if you love yoga, you'll love the film, but you don't have to love yoga to love the film.
Yeah.
It's a really good mother-daughter story. Anyway, I Am Maris on Netflix. Anyway, so with that, as soon as that happened, I was, oh, you know what? So funny. I'm sitting in the car. I'm sitting in my minivan outside of my daughter's voice lesson right now, which is exactly where I was like 2 or 3 years ago, Sarah, when I called you and said, hey, remember me?
Are you serious?
I
remember that moment. Holy, like,
this is
so
funny.
That same day. So that same, so you guys, this is how this works with Laura and I, like, it's just wild. That same day that you called me, I had somebody in my, I had a friend over and this friend was like, just so you know, your next step, you're going to have somebody call you about doing a documentary. Do you remember that? And then you called
yes.
and I was that afternoon and I was like, what the heck? This is crazy, man. Wow.
And I was like, we knew each other from when our kids were yeah. in preschool together.
We did.
And now they're seniors in high school. And so, and they were in high school a couple
it's
years
wild.
Ago when I called you. I can't remember if it was 2 years or 3 years ago at this point. Anyway,
it was 2 years ago.
And so,
yeah.
and you, cause you had moved, you've moved to LA and I'm still in the Bay Area. So, you know, we kept track of each other on Facebook, but that was really about it. And so I think I messaged you and said, I want to call you and talk to you about an idea. And you were like, okay. And then I just called you from this car, the same driveway.
Wow, that's
and,
so cool.
And said, so I don't know if you've seen on Facebook, but I started making movies and I made this one and you can't say anything yet because it's a secret, but it's going to be on Netflix next year. And so I'm done with it. And now I'm looking for my next project. And I read, I've been reading your post on Facebook and I saw you interviewed like on a, like a webcast or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, and you're a really good interviewee. And I think your story is inspiring and I'd like to do the same kind of inspiring story, with you as the subject. Would you do it? And I thought you'd be like, oh, I got to think about it. I don't know. And you were like, what you said, you're like, oh my God, somebody just told me this is going to happen.
Crazy. Yeah. It's just wild. And it's so, you know, what's interesting, just so everybody understands too, the listeners out there, we are at that same phase that you were at with I Am Maris. We're right now, we're looking for that person that wants to jump in and like help take this film to the next level. And I know that there are people out there.
Be my next Nancy Blockman.
Right? I mean, here's the thing is that, like, it's so interesting. You took the risk at 40 to go, or 41, to go back and do this. I took the risk at 41. It was 41 when I was like, okay, wow. I need to change my life. Like, I either step out and help others and use my story to create change in this world, or I just stay stagnant where I'm at. And being stagnant, just like you, it was like, that was not an option. And so, you know, I ended up being the subject. You ended up creating, you know, taking that subject to a huge platform to help others. And it's just, we need that help. We need that third person. Like, we really do. We need somebody to step in and be like, okay, here's the cash that we also need, the support that we need in order to take it to that next level. Because, and we're going to talk about this, like, we've been, you know, there's been a lot of stuff that has happened with this film. And it's not something that is quote unquote normal. Like, we filmed in the Grand Canyon, which nobody does there during a time that, you know, there was, I will say, a state of emergency. I know that you're like, oh my gosh, but it was like, it was just crazy down there. Yeah. You know, I've never seen it like that before. And it was so metaphorical of like life and the stuff that, you know, the barriers that I've had to overcome and the barriers that you've had to overcome, and now showing that it's huge, and just giving others the inspiration to be able to do the same. It's pretty freaking amazing that you and I reconnected after all these years. Now, you didn't share this piece though, which was that I was a student at Madison when you were there for your master's, and we're not 100% sure, but we're pretty certain that you were my TA during one of my classes.
Yeah.
Remember having right. this conversation? And it was you and I were sitting there, I think, over like a martini or something at your house. And I was like, wait, what? How is this even possible? And so we've crossed paths many, many times. And sometimes.
That's so weird. Did I give you an A? Did I give you an A? In introduction to drama?
To be honest with you, like, hey, my intro to drama class was pretty amazing. I loved my intro to drama class. I loved it. It was like the one class that I was like, oh gosh, I don't have to, I can just be, I can just do my thing. We all need those classes in college. Yeah. So it's crazy. It's just nuts. And so here we are. Here we are today. Yeah. So I want to ask you something. What was the biggest struggle for you going back at 41-ish, like going through that process? What was the biggest struggle for you?
I think just getting to the starting point was probably the hardest part. Like, just figuring out what I wanted to do and having the guts to say, this is what I want. And, you know, like I said, not being so afraid that people would just think I was ridiculous. And then, not that it matters what other people think, but I was afraid that they would think that. And then I would think that and I would lose my courage. Mm-hmm. So just sort of getting started. And then there were, like, you know, lots of little, you know, obstacles along the way. It was a real adjustment for my family. Fortunately, my husband and my kids were really supportive. My parents, even though they live in a different state, were really supportive. But it was a different dynamic because the family was used to me being the one who was always available, who was always home, mm-hmm. whose job was just like a little tiny part of her life, you know, that I just fit in. And now it was like, no, I have to get up and I have to go in the city. And I remember, like, once I was in the city, I was in San Francisco, my husband was in San Francisco, both commuting. So the kids are, you know, an hour's drive away or an hour's train ride away. And, you know, what happens when one of the kids gets sick, you know? And it always used to be me. And then I'd be like, you know, honey, I'm in the middle of something right here. You need to leave work and go. And that was like, wait, what? You know, that was, mm-hmm. those were struggles. And I missed some, like, family trips because I was filming. But it was actually, all that adjustment was a really good thing because it kind of restored the balance in my relationship with my husband, you know, because when we started dating in grad school, you know, we were very much equals and we very much had the same goals and aspirations. And then, you know, when you have kids, it's hard not to fall into sort of traditional divisions of labor and a relationship. And that caused, like, a lot of tension and resentment. You know, he felt the burden of supporting the family financially and having to get up and go to work every day, day after day. And I felt, like, you know, the burden of having to support the family emotionally and stay home day after day, you know, and be isolated in that way. So it was good to have this balance. And we actually ended up commuting together a lot of the time. So we would sit on the train together, and we realized with younger kids, awesome. Like those were the hour in the morning and the hour in the evening when we like could actually have a conversation.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
it was good for us.
Yeah, I find that right now, because like getting even in my wilderness first responder certification, I had people that were questioning me because, oh, you're in your 40s and you're just starting over. And what are you doing? Like, nobody's ever done this before in terms of, you know, guiding in the Grand Canyon and bringing in coaching and meditation and breath work and mm-hmm. you know, nature mm-hmm. therapy and all the things. And I was questioned a lot. I never listened to it either. Sometimes it affected me, but for the most part, it was like, you know, use that as my own power to just keep doing what I'm doing, because I believed in it so deeply. And at the same time, right. there were times where, you know, yeah, I mean, especially as a single mom now, my kids are having to step up more and go grocery shopping before I get home. I'll be like, hey, can you just make sure that the kitchen is clean? Can you make sure that, I just like a few nights ago, I said to my 18-year-old.
And you have all boys.
I have all boys. And I literally said to my 18-year-old, to Carson, I said, you know, there is some lucky woman for you. There is some lucky woman out there that is going to freaking love all that you have had to actually endure, because it's taught you how to step up and do all the things that for a lot of people, they're just like, how do you do your, you know, they go to college and they're like, how do you do your laundry? Can you throw whites in with reds? You know, and him, he's like doing everybody's laundry, yeah. you know, I'm like, good
that
for you.
That is good.
It is. It's awesome. Awesome. Like, and he, I'm just going to say it, man, that kid can shop. Like he always comes home with the best groceries. It's true.
Okay. I'm so impressed.
It's true.
My daughter is super smart. She's a senior. Like Sarah and I have kids like the same age. Well, she has Jacob, who's much older, but then Carson and Ellie are the same age. They're both seniors in high school. And then my son and her youngest son are the same age. They're both in eighth grade.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right.
I don't know why I doubted that for a second, but my daughter, super smart, great student. Really hard worker, really motivated. But like my husband and I went away for the weekend and we came home and she tried to wash dishes and like the kitchen was full of bubbles.
That's awesome.
I don't know what she did. Like she put the wrong kind of soap in the dishwasher.
Oops.
Like she put the hand soap, you know, in the dishwasher. Hilarious.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, trust me, I've had a few things where I've had to be like, dude, really? No, that's not what you do. Yeah, they learn that way. So it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. So, okay. So let's talk about.
Okay.
No, it's okay.
I was going to say one other thing about school.
Oh, go for it.
You were talking about wilderness training and your doubters and your training, but that was definitely my experience as well. I was definitely way older than anybody else in my film program. And I was the only woman.
I
was much older and I was the only female, and not just like amongst the other students, but amongst all of the teachers. There were no women teachers. We didn't even watch any movies about women. Of course, no movies by women, but it was just like, oh, let's watch another like mafia gangster gross rape movie.
What?
It was great. So I just kind of had like a sit down with the head teacher and I was like, you know, there are other kinds of movies out there that we could discuss.
That's horrible.
And he was like, well, can you suggest one? I was like, okay. So I came in with like a list of like.
Of course you did.
And it was, and when we would team up in groups to make films, you know, everybody got to direct and then the rest of the class would fulfill roles in your crew. So, you know, like I would direct my movie and this guy would do the camera work and this guy would do the sound work and then we would swap. And every time it was my turn to be on somebody else's crew, they kept asking me to be the assistant director, which is in a tiny film school production like this is basically like the secretary assistant, make coffee, get lunch.
No way.
Or organize everything, make charts, you know, instead of just being a sound person or the camera person. And, you know, because I was the woman and that's the right. mom and the old lady. Yeah. I even had my professor even called me in once and was like, so-and-so, this young 20-something boy, is having a rough time. And I was wondering if maybe you could, like, take care of him.
No flipping way.
I am a student just like him here for the same reasons. You know,
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. That's ridiculous. Oh my gosh.
But it's all good now.
Yeah, because look at where you're at. It's like, no. You know, I do wonder that it's interesting because I wonder, like, the fact that you and I had such a history, you know, I'm talking about independently, but we had such histories behind us that stepping into that at 41, for me, I was kind of like, I've already lived through so much. Bring it.
Oh, that's so, so true. Like, if I'd been in that same atmosphere in my 20s, yeah, I would have just cried and gone home. Mm-hmm. Probably. Or I mean, I probably wouldn't have quit, but it would have been a lot harder and it would have affected me a lot more and emotionally. And this, I was just kind of like, you know, I would have taken it on myself. And now I was like, okay, you have a trouble with me as a woman in this program or as an older person in this program. Okay. That sucks, but that's not my problem.
Right. It's so true. It's so freaking true with so many things. I think that, you know, we get hung up on, well, but you know, I'm 40 or I'm this age or I'm that age. And I'm like, yeah, but look at all the freaking experience that you had prior to walk into and to do this,
right?
You know, just right. Catapult yourself. You've already got so much.
Right. And also I think for me, for telling stories, like when you've lived a life and you know, your concerns are beyond just yourself. Like when you're in your 20s, it's just, you're just so all about yourself. And then once you've lived a while and you're a mom, like you're living your life for yourself, but also for other people, and you're much more empathetic. And so I think you can tell better stories. And the same, I mean, definitely the same for you when you're helping other people, when you're coaching people, when you're guiding other people. Like if you were 20 and you'd only lived your life, you know, how much perspective, wisdom, and empathy could you have?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. I know. Well, I'm just honored and grateful. I've told you that. Like, I wouldn't have anybody else tell this story.
Likewise.
I wouldn't have, no one.
No pressure.
No pressure. You know, I mean that from the bottom of my heart. You know that.
I know.
Your work is phenomenal. And people listen, I get it because I, you know, the pressure of like, you know, I'm writing a book right now and I'm just sitting here like, oh my God, this is so much pressure. And at the same time, I have to pull myself out of that and realize the only pressure that's being put on me is me. All I need to do is tell the story. And it's already written. It just has to be put on page. So if we can kind of like pull, you know what I mean? But like, if we can just pull ourselves out of that and go, you know, the hard part's done. Like I lived it. Just, you know, the hard part's done. Like, now we're just telling it. Like this is, this should be fun. Right? It's like,
you don't have to walk through it again.
Right. Exactly. I already did that. This is like the fun part. So I have to remind myself of that a lot as I'm sitting here trying to get the words on the page. Tell me about, so we actually just got done filming in the Grand Canyon. I guess it was only like 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks. It's wild. I can't believe it. This hasn't even been that long.
That whole thing was like, it was an out of body, out of the timeline experience. So it's like, it is, it's like, where does it fit in time? I don't know. Was it yesterday? Was it a year ago? It's just kind of always there.
It's always there.
Omnipresent way.
Oh gosh. But I'm going to kind of back up really quick about this. Cause when we were talking about doing the nature piece of this film, you were like, let's, you know, I have this thought and I want to take you, like, I want it to be like in the Grand Canyon and all the things. And I was like, Laura, I don't know if we can get a permit to do that, but you know, we'll try. And
everybody told me, I first talked about that when I and Maris was showing at the Mill Valley Film Festival fall before last. And I was talking to other filmmakers there and they were like, well, what are you working on next? And I was telling them about this film and I was like, yeah. And she leads to the Grand Canyon. So it would be really great if like we could film her leading a group through the Grand Canyon. And they were all like, ha ha ha. Yeah. Good luck. You'll never get a permit to film there. Well, you did it.
Well, yeah.
You did it. I filled out the paperwork and Sarah, and I sent it to Sarah and she literally walked it into the Grand Canyon offices and was like, unlike everybody else, it emails it in and then you get the form letter that's like, thank you for submitting your permit. We'll get back to you in 6 to 18 months, you know? So I was like, hi,
here's a
film permit.
was like, my name is Sarah, and you know me from XYZ, like, blah, 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 and here's what we're doing.
I'm the one who led the blind woman to the canyon. I'm the one who led the blind woman to break the world record through the canyon. So you owe me.
Yeah. Seriously. I was like, so can we have a permit? And she was like, wow, yeah, I love the work you're doing. Sure. And then I texted you right away.
Wow.
So and I was like, wow. Check. And you were like, oh my God, now I got to get fit.
Yeah. Was that my reaction?
It pretty much
I was.
Like,
damn, now I have to do it.
Oh no, what did I just agree to? And here we are.
Yep.
And then it was like, I don't even, I think that was in May. I think that was in May that we got the permit. And then in November, over Thanksgiving.
We were going to try and film it in May.
Yes.
That was the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. I mean, it all blurred together, but and then I remember like, can we change the dates? And she was like, yeah. Because we didn't have the money to do it in May yet. We hadn't raised the money to do it. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I say this, you already transformed me by just letting me do this movie, because 2-3 years ago, when we first talked about it, I was like completely not physically fit. I'd just been sitting in a dark room editing for months and like did not move at all. And I remember going to like the sound and the color studios, and they'll ask you as the director, which is, it was such a weird experience, like what you like to snack on, and because you'd be sitting in this dark room for hours with these guys playing little dials and stuff. And my like producer, she'd be like, you know, hummus and carrot sticks, and I'd be like, Sour Patch Kids and red vines and cheese.
Oh my gosh.
So I seriously sit there. Sometimes even lay, because I have to have a couch in some of the editing suites. And I just lay there and like stuff my face with candy for like all day long. And so after you and I started talking about this movie, I started to change my life. And it was partly because of you, but I also think it's this weird 7-year cycle. I'm going to sound all woo-woo-y now, but there's this theory that you kind of like open like a new leaf, a new chapter of your life, like every 7 years is a kind of a new development, which is makes sense to that. You know, you started the wilderness stuff around 41, 42. I started the film stuff around 41, 42. And now 7 years later, we're working on this movie together. And for me, this has been like about the time I finally like take control over my body in my life and like become fit. So like, couple of years ago, I went through like a cleanse and I started eating right, and I lost like 25 pounds, and I've kept it off now for like a year and a half. Yeah. And then once you got the, which is funny because I filmed this whole yoga movie, you know, and like didn't ever do really any yoga, and I'd be there filming the hot yoga, and I'd be like, I gotta take a break, it's too hot, I'd have to like leave, and now I do yoga all the time and I love it. And, so we got to permit. I was like, damn it, I'm going to have to hike the Grand Canyon. And I have pins in my ankle and I have like bad knees. And I was like, this is going to be really hard. And I don't do nature.
Which is camping. So funny.
Or rustic or anything.
It was, I mean,
vacation
idea.
For me is like a 4-star resort with like the window open. I'm like, let the breeze in. And and so I was like, oh God, I gotta do all this. I can't just like send the crew down. I have to like be there. And so I got a trainer and I got joined a gym. I got in shape, and so now I'm in like the best shape of my life.
Yeah.
Now I got to maintain it, because I was kind of like, after the Grand Canyon hike's done, I'm done.
Which, by the way, nobody else has done.
Oh my gosh. Nobody else has what?
Oh, I said, nobody's ever filmed in the Grand Canyon, and here you are. Like, you did something that nobody else has done.
Oh, I think people filmed in the Grand Canyon.
Well, they have, but
I think
not
it's been
this.
Done before. I just...
Not like this.
Well, yeah, not this movie, but yeah.
No, not like this. And so it's pretty cool. It's, I mean, somebody said, when you start doing things with me, you just never know what is going to be next. And so there you go.
It's very, scary.
It's been, I've been told that many times. Scary. I've heard, you scare me, Sarah, but in a very good way.
I remember like a year ago when we were filming you on your paddleboard, and like out on this little dinky boat at sunrise. And I was like in a coat and a scarf. I'm like freezing on the boat. And you're out there in your swimsuit.
I was. You know,
just a little jacket.
Chasing dolphins. You know,
paddling the wave, their legs in the freezing cold water. Winter. Just paddling out 5 miles offshore. I'm like, is this safe?
Oh, it's going to be such a good film. I want to do like an outtake section with just you. Like you can like see the film as it's created, right? Like this, like, so you can actually then turn the camera on you and have
epic empowering nature thing. And then you turn on the camera and you see this director like in a full
like jacket,
down sleeping bag and shivering. Where's the hot dog?
Oh, geez.
Or you're talking to everyone and you're like, the canyon will give you what you need. And I'm like, yeah. I need a martini.
That's what you said. You were like, I just want a martini. Like, sorry, it doesn't give you that. Oh my God. Literally, you guys, this was 6 days. Like, we did this for 6 days. This is what it was. I think the outtakes would be amazing. I'm pretty
sure. I don't know. I don't think they're on film. I'm pretty much trying to stay behind myself. The camera at all times.
Yeah, but I wasn't.
Oh, that's phone. Right. I do. So Brittany, I think, got a shot of my butt.
I got a few great shots, epic shots, epic videos of you. Like staring at the weather report going, oh my God, seriously? I can just see your head spinning. How are we going to get out of here? So, okay, let's talk about the...
Okay, yeah, so we should talk about that, yeah.
You know, what's the weather going to do? Because the weather was all over the place. And I say that all the time. I'm like, the canyon gives us what we need. We just go with it. We flow with whatever happens. And
and apparently the canyon said, Laura is afraid of cold weather.
And
being trapped by snow. She's afraid of power outages and blizzards.
So we're giving her everything
that
she needs.
Let's give her
that. And that's pretty much what happened.
Oh, are you kidding me?
We hiked down and it was beautiful. It was actually like a fall day. It was gorgeous. And then
it was gorgeous. And I kept going, wow, this is actually pretty. I was like, I didn't think it was going to be this.
You were like, I didn't know it was going to be this beautiful. That's all she kept saying. She's like, I had no idea it'd be this beautiful. I'm like, it's gorgeous. Yeah. And then we got down there. We hiked in at dark. And the next day was Thanksgiving. Right? The next day was Thanksgiving and it was beautiful out. It was raining on and off and we did see two rainbows and we got the film footage. Like we got, you know, some pretty amazing, you know, interviews in, and then we had Thanksgiving dinner. That was great. And then we went to bed. We played some fun games in the canteen that night, had a blast, went to sleep. And at 2:30 in the morning, the power went out. And apparently there was a state of emergency on the rim, which we didn't even know about. 24 inches of snow fell. It was blizzard conditions up there. They lost all heat. They lost everything for those people that were staying in the hotels up at the rim. But we were actually in a really good space. Like we were actually like, we were at the bottom, which it snowed down there. It snowed at the bottom. We woke up to no heat in our cabin, all like complete darkness. And do you remember the guy coming and like pounding on our door for breakfast? And I walked out. I opened the door. I took one step out from the front door and I had flip flops on and my foot went into a puddle of water. And
of course
I
went, you did.
Oh dear God. I was like, this isn't good. And Brittany was behind me. She's like, it's okay. It's okay. And I was like, I'm breathing through it, because all I kept thinking was, poor Laura's going to wake up and she's going to be like, seriously, we don't have power.
Okay. This is what I woke up to. This cracked me up because I I'm like being exaggerating a little bit about my like capacity for nature and hiking and stuff. I do love that sort of stuff to a point, but it's just not what I practice a lot.
Right.
And I'm not usually so like cranky and, you know, pessimistic, but like Sarah is so optimistic. She's so like, everything is awesome all the time, that I felt like I had to fill the like the naysayer role. Like I needed to like think about everything that could go wrong, which is faulty thinking. This is not, I'm not saying this is what you should do. This is just what I did.
Right.
And so like I kept calling her like, well, what if it, look at this weather forecast. Like you said, it was going to, we were going to be like swimming at the bottom and wearing shorts.
I thought we would be.
And, and you still thought we wouldn't until like the night before. And I'm like, it's a low of zero. And you were like, that's at night. Like, that doesn't mean it's going to get swimming weather during the day when it's zero.
I did wear shorts one day.
Yeah, you did. Let's, and you were flip flop. And then in the couple of weeks preceding the, how I dealt with my anxiety about like all the things that could go wrong, I was like, what if the power goes out down there? We're not bringing sleeping bags. We're not bringing stuff for campfires. You can't have any fires down there. We're not preparing as if you would be in nature unprotected. We're not backpacking, right? We're hiking down to an isolated spot to stay in a cabin that, you know, your life will be sustained by this tiny bit of power that's coming into this isolated spot. And if that power goes, like, what happens? You're like, what if you don't? We're not bringing enough water to survive for like 5 days. We're not, like I said, we're not bringing stuff to protect us from the elements and the cold. And of course, Sarah was like, it'll be fine. And I'm like, yeah. So I kept waking up in the middle of the night and ordering things on Amazon Prime, like stuff I wouldn't even remember ordering the next day. And like, and so like my backpack had like an emergency Mylar sleeping bag, like, contact down blanket. And like, I got out all my ski clothes and I'm like showing everybody, like, I'm going to wear this Muppet mask and stuff. And everyone's laughing at me, especially Sarah. And the night before we hiked down, everyone's like going over what they're going to pack, and Sarah lists what she's going to pack. And she's like, a pair of shorts and my flip flops and my lightweight down jacket and a pair of hiking pants and, you know, my Camelback, and we're good. And everyone's like, okay. And I'm like, whoa, hold up. Do you want to know what I'm going to bring? And I list that I'm like, I'm bringing two pairs of long underwear and a ski mask and down gloves and da 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 da. And everyone's like, oh my God, Laura, you don't need all that. That's crazy. And I'm like, we'll see. And I'm not sharing any of it. Something happened. So now flash forward, it's the middle of the night. I wake up and the crew, we're in this like slightly separated room from everybody else. It's just like a little cabin door in between us is basically one giant room. But I wake up in the middle of the night because the heater's going and it's so silent. And I hear someone, I think it was Eliana, and you talking, and you're like, oh God, the power's out. And somebody goes, Laura's gonna kill you. And somebody else goes, and she's not gonna share her shit with us.
She's not gonna share her sleeping bag. Yeah. Do you remember? Laura's gonna kill you. Oh my God, you heard that?
Yes.
That's hilarious. Oh my God. Like, I'm dying right now.
I wish I had all this stuff on tape.
You're
I was so busy trying to survive, which really I didn't have to be. It was only in my mind that I felt like I was just trying to survive. But I didn't capture these things on film. I mean, luckily I had
they're in my head.
That was captured a lot of stuff. But yeah.
Walking out of that cabin and then putting my foot into the water, I was like, oh dear God, she's literally gonna kill me. We go to the canteen for breakfast, no lights. I thought that they would have something down there to give us some sort of lights. And no, we had breakfast at like these cute little lanterns that were stuck on our table. And then when he started saying, you can only have one sausage and two pancakes, we're in a state of emergency. It's a state of emergency. And I was like, what's going on? I was like, what? And so,
yeah.
And then
they were like, and the pipes might freeze, so we might be out of water.
He actually said, go around and just so you know, the worst that could happen is that the pipes freeze and then we don't have any water. And I was like, okay, well, I kept going through the worst things. I was like, I've got my water filter and I've got my stove and we'll, like, no matter what, we'll be okay. But then I'm kind of sitting there and I'm drinking my coffee and I'm barely eating. And the girls all look at me and they went, are you okay? And I was like, I'm just thinking of the worst case scenario. I was like, I'm okay. And they, you could tell that they were like, Sarah, are you sure you're okay? And I said, no, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm just trying to figure out how to tell Laura about all of this. Really, that's what I was thinking. Like, how do I tell her that if the pipes freeze, then we have an issue? But not really, because I kind of have it backed up. But it's like, and honestly, I was most concerned because I thought, oh my God, we're down here at the bottom. Do we even have enough? Do we even have enough batteries to film? Like, I was like, what if we ran out of batteries? Then what?
Well, that was a big deal because we had to charge our batteries at night so that we could keep recording sound and recording film. But luckily they had been really good about conserving and charging before the power went out. Yeah, and really we backed up the film to my computer before it went out. So we actually lucked out. And also cold drains batteries faster. So we were a little worried about that. But as it turned out, the only thing that the cold killed was my Apple Watch, which infuriated me because I wanted the thing to just like blow up with like, you are an exercise goddess.
But it was actually ended up being like that day waking up. It was so gorgeous down there. Like just seeing the snow and everything was so beautiful. It was, I've never seen that. I've never seen snow at the bottom of the canyon before. And we got a great hike in and, that was it was a cool day. It was really cool to be down there during that experience. I mean, it was for me.
Yeah. It was for me. It was all good. It was good.
And then hiking out was amazing. Yeah. Yeah. It was hard hiking. You're like, oh my God, but hiking out, it was hard, but it was, I just want to bring something up that I didn't really share with you guys too much, but it's so interesting. We ran into, Klaus, you know, that he was just amazing. And Klaus came out of, he came out of the blue, like a mile from the rim. We were a mile down yet. And he came literally around the corner and then took your bag and helped out with like just getting us up to the top. And he was so sweet and just such a gentle, nice human being. And I was like, dude, I turned to him, I'm like, you're like the angel on the trail. And it was so cool for me because remember one of the things that we were talking about a lot in the canyon was just receiving help and that's one of the things that I was talking a lot with the other women that were there was, just allowing yourself to receive. And that was, I'm usually that person. I'm usually the Klaus. I'm usually the one that's helping out and taking bags and, you know, grabbing like, you know, some more water. Let me give you some food. Are you this? Are you that? And I gotta tell you, that was a really good freaking gift for me. Like having him come around and being there was so sweet and just so nice. And I thought, oh my gosh.
Well, you were still doing that. You were still being everybody's angel.
I was.
There was just a lot of people to be an angel for. So it's good thing.
Well, but for me, it was just like, but when I'm talking about that, I mean like with strangers, that's usually me with strangers. Yeah. Even when I'm alone, I'm usually that person that walks up on somebody that needs help. And you're saying, okay, like for one of the biggest things that's most difficult for people on the trail is that first of all, asking for help. And then, and then just being that person who's usually, you know, having to give it, even when it's not like for work, right? It's just like, that's just who I've been. And it was so cool though, to just have somebody else who didn't have a clue what was going on with us, came out of nowhere and was just like, yeah, let me help you. How many more bags can I take? And I was like, dang.
Oh,
you're so sweet.
I know.
Thank you. Thank you for helping strangers.
Yeah.
And we need more of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
So it was cool.
Can I tell that? Can I tell that story from my point of view?
Please. He was cute too.
Okay. So I hope he doesn't ever hear this. I'd be embarrassed. But I gotta go back to the hike out. So like I was, not only was I scared of the elements and the isolation and being with 10, you know, relatively unknown women for 5 days and so many things that were pushing me out of my comfort zone for this shoot. Like for all of you guys, it was this like quest. For me, I was thinking of it only as a shoot, right? This is part of my job. This is just another film shoot. And you kept telling me it was going to be more than that for me. It was going to be this whole experience. And I was like, no, I'm just working. But of course it was. I, you know, so I'd been training and I was really worried about, the hike itself as well, the physical part of it. And my doctors had told me, you know, you're in pretty good shape now. Look at shape you are. But, you know, going down will be the hardest because of your knees and your ankles. Well, going down actually was not that hard. I mean, everybody was hurting, but you just pop an Advil and you just like keep going, you know? Yeah. And, like you said, it was beautiful weather. And, you know, the only thing I was worried, I really wanted to get there before the sun went down so we could get the shot of everybody crossing the bridge and entering Phantom Ranch in the light. So I was getting irritable that we were taking too long to get down. And we kept stopping to get, you were like, oh, this is the most beautiful view. This is the most beautiful view. And my camerawoman was like, yes, we got to get this. And then at one point I yell, this is not a nature movie.
And then I walked past her and I was like, get the shot. It's really pretty.
Yeah. That was hilarious. And it's all, like you said, it all turned out for the best. So after that, I was like, okay, now it's the hike up. And then I started to get really scared because, okay, the hike down wasn't that hard. So I should have been more confident about the hike up. But instead, I was like, no, now the hike up is going to be really, really hard. Because mm-hmm. that's how my mind works, you know. Since that was easy, I was like, this is going to be hard. And but then we started out and I'm telling all the middle-aged women out there, of course you and Brittany are like super in shape and super great hikers. And I can't even compare, but like, I felt like besides you guys, like I represented the middle-aged women, like, well, like we took off on the hike and I was leading and I was setting a fast pace and the younger women were like, whoa, okay, let's keep up with Laura. And
you were cruising,
like, you know, it was good. And we did the whole first half and we got to, Indian Garden for halfway. And I was like not tired and it had been beautiful. I mean, it was a little muddy, but like the leaves were still on the aspen trees and it was just gorgeous. And we were making good time and it was looking like we were going to get to the top of the canyon, like in the afternoon. So we would totally get the sunset and it was just awesome. And then, and we had a funny little lunch break with some great stories told by, the women on the hike. And then we started up again and we had to put the crampons on at this point because we knew ice was coming. And then that's when it first started getting hard for me, is the second half, because walking in the crampons, something I'd never done before, the micro spikes. And before we hit the ice, it really was hard on my ankles because it's really hard to balance, like balancing on a bunch of little steel blades. So I kept twisting my ankles and I was like, but then once I hit the ice, it was okay. And we're still going. And I was still like cruising and we got to the 3 mile house, right? Which is the little stop 3 miles from the top. And it was still keeping up a really good pace and it was feeling good. And then we stopped for a while and we waited and I got really cold because we weren't moving. Yeah. And I got really hungry, but I was super nauseous. I think I hadn't been eating hardly at all when we were down there and, you know, the altitude was changing and everything. And then we started up for the mile and half house and she's stop and you break it a mile and a half. At this point, I'm hurting. Like, I'm really tired. I'm nauseous. I'm feeling faint. I'm feeling a little dizzy. But I'm like, well, we've only got like a mile and a half to go. We can do this. So then we start out and we hike and it's like it's just getting really, really hard because the elevation's gaining really fast. And, you know, we've already been hiking for like 10 hours. And I feel like we must have gone at least half of that mile and a half. And so I stop and I ask Eliana, who's actually tracking it, and I'm like, how far did we just go? And she's like, 0.2 miles is all we've gone. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? We still have 1.3 to go. She's like, yeah. So we start hiking again. And then the sun sets. And it's the sun is setting and it's dark. And I'm like, we're going to lose the shot. And then this guy, right before the sunset, this guy comes and he walks past us. And he's just wearing like a wool coat and like khaki pants and like he's got like a messenger bag, like he's just like going to work, you know, like full, you know, mountain gear. And we're all like, oh, look at that new guy walking by. He's just going for a little sunset cruise from the top. He's just walking down a little bit, I guess, and then he's gonna come back up. But Michelle yells, where are you going? It looks like he's going to work. But anyways, flash forward like a half an hour later or whatever, the sun's going down. I'm done. I start to sort of panic because I feel like this is never going to end and I'm just not in my right mind. And I start to cry and everybody's like, Laura, we are almost there. We are almost there. And as it turns out, we were, we only had like 15 more minutes to go. It only took me 15 minutes after that little breakdown to get out. But everybody had been saying we were almost there for like the whole time. So I was like, I don't believe you. I don't believe you anymore. You've been saying we're almost there for hours. We're not almost there. And that's when Klaus reappeared and you said, hey, could you take my friend's bag? And he took it. And then he helped me walk the last 15 minutes up and our water tubes were freezing. And so
like, it was amazing.
He warmed up my water tube. And it is. And then when we got to the top, I didn't believe him. He was like, hey, we're here. And I'm like, no, are we really? And there's like electric lights and stuff, you know, we're like at the parking lot. I'm like, are you sure there's not a cliff around the corner? You have to go up. He's like, no, we're really here. I like, honestly, he had to tell me like four times that it was done, that we were there because I didn't believe him.
Oh my gosh. I wasn't with you. I was below you guys yet. So I didn't
right,
even
get you, there were there. Yeah. Cause I was trying to you get up ahead and so that I could get up there with the crew and we could be all ready when you guys came up to the top. So yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I remember hiking up and thinking, I know that we didn't get the sunset shot coming out, but this is the most amazing moon and the stars were so pretty. And it was just like, it was just so crazy to be hiking out.
It was so really pretty. Beautiful. And like I said, yeah, I didn't get the sunset shot, but then I put my headlamp on and I've never seen snow like sparkle like that mm-hmm. before. Like it literally looked like the snow was just these dollops filled with diamonds.
Yeah. It's so pretty. It was so beautiful. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Well, I'm just so grateful. I got to tell you, I'm so thrilled that you went through that experience.
Me too. And
as hard as some of the moments were,
all worth it.
She's going to kill me. She's going to kill me. Oh, well.
All worth it.
It was so worth it. It was so amazing. So I want to just ask you, like, what are the next steps? Because I want. Everybody to be ready to hear this, right? Like grab your pencil and paper, guys, because these are the next steps. This is where we actually are reaching out because we do need help. And so, yeah. Laura, so, take it away.
Even though it's a totally independent movie and Sarah's not making any money and I'm not, you know, I'm not getting paid to do this, it still requires a lot of money to make it happen. And we're really fortunate to raise enough money through crowdfunding and through a big part of it through our one amazing donor, Jay Lee, so that we could pay for this shoot, this hike and the shoots that we've already done. I've already been to Wisconsin, the Black Earth, Wisconsin, to interview Sarah's family and then down to LA a couple times to interview Sarah's family down there and some of the other women who are in the movie. And you know, the women who went on this hike with Sarah, these four incredible women that you'll meet who all have incredible stories and did this experience, you know, took a lot of guts and did this hike as well and tell their stories. There are four women that couldn't have taken one of these trips if it wasn't for the donations to the movie. So the, you know, Sarah donated her time and then we paid their way to have this experience. And so thank you everyone for all of that. But now all of that money is gone because yeah. we took it all to make that happen. And it would seem like, oh, well, you're done with the movie. But the biggest part of making any movie, especially a documentary, is what we call the post-production phase. Which is the third and final phase of making a movie. And that's when you take all the footage and you take all the sound and you put it all together. And it takes a lot of professionals. It takes editing. It takes, you have to buy music and music is really expensive. And then you need, you know, special effects and you need sound mixers and you need colorizers and all color graders and corrections. And anyway, it's a big, lengthy, expensive process. And, it costs money. So the way that independent film is usually created is through independent funds and donations. So if you're interested in seeing this movie be completed and getting out there so people can watch it and hopefully be inspired and be helped by it, we'd appreciate your help. And there's no amount is too small. $5 given by a lot of people makes a lot of money. So we're sponsored by Fractured Atlas, which if you donate through them, they're a nonprofit. So you can take it as a tax deduction and the money goes directly into the film. And you can find out how to get to Fractured Atlas and how to donate under our film by going to our website, which is www.walkthroughthis.com. There's a little icon you can click to donate. There's a, it's in the menu item. There's a link. There's lots of different ways. I often post it on my pages. Sarah posts it on hers. Walk Through This is on Facebook. You can find out more information there. Text us, call us, email us, message us. if you can't find out how to help, we'll let you know.
Yep.
And thank you.
It would be great to have some big donors and somebody with, like, you know, I don't know. Anybody know Patagonia? Just saying. Just saying.
Yeah. Actually,
anybody know, actually, any sort of, like.
Yeah. My last film, I Am Maris, Lululemon actually came through. Not after the movie was all done, and we created it. So they wish they'd found out about it sooner, and they could have helped make it, but. They liked the movie so much that they, after the fact, even after it was on Netflix, they funded a multi-city theatrical tour and took the film and opened up these really nice theaters in four different cities and invited people in and to watch the movie and then had these panel group discussions with Maris and other experts. And it was this real sort of inspiring community event. So it would be great to have, you know, someone like that get behind this movie.
Be amazing.
That knows the power of nature, nature therapy, and the empowerment of getting outdoors and, you know,
helping others.
Spread that word.
Wants to be a part of something so much bigger. And quite frankly, I mean, I think it's pretty rad that it's kind of like, was it Matt Damon and who's the other one where they started, they did that film. Who's the other one? Matt Damon and help me here. Do you know what I'm talking
Matt
about?
Matt Damon and that film, no.
Matt Damon and his best friend. Who's the other one? Matt Damon and they started, they did the... Ben Affleck, thank you. And they did the film and it was just like those two, it was just the two of them. And they were like, we're going to create this film.
Oh, when they did Good Will Hunting?
Yes, Good Will Hunting, such a good movie.
Yeah, back when they were like right out of college or in college. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago, but we're just
dating ourselves.
We're two moms that decided to go back to school and decided to share her story and are, you know, looking to create good in this world. And so we do need help from other people that are maybe, you know, haven't or can't do that step of what we've done, but also do want to still be and create an impact in the world. And this is a perfect opportunity for them to do that. So, you know, any networking or any kind of, you know, anybody that you know that might know somebody else, that's always 6 degrees of separation. So who knows who that can also be a part of this. It's huge. It's a really big opportunity to create a heck of a lot of change. So there you go. There's
and then you also, you know, if that's not enough to incent you, like if, you know, you get to get on the inside track and you get your name in the credits and, you know, big donors become executive producers and you get to know, you know, the crew and the cast and get to go to premieres and movie festivals and all that stuff. If you want, you don't have to.
Yeah. And so it's cool. It's a really, it's a cool thing to be a part of.
Okay. My daughter has come back and she's in the car.
Creating such a huge like message. It's pretty wild. So it's cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So with that, I just want to thank you 1,000 times over. I know that you
thank
have
you.
Her girl and then somebody else. Like you're being mom stuff in taxi mom stuff in between this, which is really great.
Yeah, I am. I'm being a mom taxi today. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm doing the same. I'm in between basketball things and all sorts of different things that we're doing today. So this is what moms do. We fit stuff in.
Yep.
So thank you 1,000 times over for being a part of this. I am just honored, like I've said 1,000 times, and
likewise, I gotcha.
Rock, it's been a blast so far, and the trip's only begun. So, sorry, you're like, oh no,
still, we got another canyon to climb,
we got other things. So, all right, honey, I will be in touch, and thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you, bye, everybody.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Live Boldly podcast. I am grateful to have you here, and I would love to invite you over to sarahschultenkranz.com to grab my free 7 Steps to a Joy-Filled Life.
I share these 7 steps from my own heart, soul, and experience. These steps transformed my own life from victim to survivor. Also, please, let's all be a ripple effect of change in today's world. I ask of you to please share this podcast with others that may need to be inspired or who need to hear from others going through where they are right now. To grow this podcast, please leave an iTunes review, go to my Instagram or Facebook page, and let me know what you think. I love hearing from each and one of you. I love sharing your thoughts, messages, and inspiring words. Because we are not alone in this world, friends. Let's keep the ripple moving. It begins with each one of us. I love you and have a great remainder of your day.